Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Penny, after that last game, and kind of, he was kind of asked about that. And for the first time, he didn't just immediately say the same thing that he's been saying, which up to that point had been, you know, yeah, we're going to try. Like, we're definitely going to try, you know, whatever. He still has never said we're definitely going to get anyone. But I was talking to somebody in Hawaii who was telling me that it's their understanding that even if you have practiced with a Division I team since the fall semester began, you are ineligible to play this year, even if you have not played in the game. And to me, if that's true, if that's accurate, that makes the pool –
a lot smaller,
very small pool, a lot smaller. So, yeah. And then the last point is, even if Memphis is going to add someone, or if they do add someone, I just have a hard time believing that it's going to be the type of, it's not going to be a Naquan Tomlin. You know what I mean? It's going to be someone who is going to help with depth. But like, that's going to be about it. That's all anyone should expect.
All right, Munz, we appreciate it, my man.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Jason Munz, Tiger basketball beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. It is, of course, the holiday season in full force. It's one of the biggest times of the year to get engaged. And if you're thinking about getting engaged, go see my friends over at Robert Irwin Jewelers. It's the number one place to buy engagement rings. And I'm not just telling you as a paid advertisement. I'm telling you this because I myself am a customer. At Robert Irwin Jewelers, you get more choices. They have an enormous collection of natural and lab-grown diamonds in all shapes and sizes. They can even custom design your engagement ring risk-free and easy. You can do so with the meant-to-be guarantee. That means you buy your loose diamond and custom-made engagement ring at Robert Irwin Jewelers. You have a full 365 days to return it. Also, Robert Irwin Jewelers is the only place to get Daphne diamonds, a one-of-kind collection, combination of fashion-forward, modern design architecture with traditional diamond-cutting techniques to create a diamond that shines visibly and brighter. You can't get it anywhere else. Howie named it after his daughter, so you know that it's something special, not only to him, but it'll also be something special for her as well. If you can dream it, Robert Irwin Jewelers can make it happen. They can make an engagement ring from something as simple as a picture or a drawing or even a dream that you have. Then we'll make a ring for you that is uniquely yours. Also at Robert Irwin Jewelers, you get free ring sizing for life. Also, check out the free jewelry spa service for life. Bring in your jewelry, and they'll make it look like the day that you got it. You can also ask her now and pay later with great financing options like 24 months deferred interest or take up to 60 months to pay at a low APR. Connor got his wife's engagement ring there. I got my wife's engagement ring there. We are happy customers. We've even gone back and added to my wife's engagement ring. So I cannot stress enough. They are fantastic to deal with, and I would not go anywhere else other than Robert Irwin Jewelers. They have over four decades of experience in the jewelry business. Robert Irwin Jewelers has become a trusted name known for providing timeless treasures for generations of families. Bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices. You can shop in-store or online at rijewelers.com. Also, during the holiday season, they are open on Sundays. Let's get into the list. We haven't talked college football. Herd had a tough one on Saturday. Vols had a big one on Saturday. We had a lot of turmoil in the college football playoff rankings. We've now got politicking season going on. We've also had more firings. We'll get into all of that, plus some NFL during hour number two. Stick around. You'll listen to Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. We'll have some reaction to week 13 of the NFL, but we got to get into some Grizzlies, get into some college football. Let's do that now. Let's do that on the list. The Memphis Grizzlies. Yeah, I heard since we have last spoken, the Grizzlies have a perfect week last week, a perfect homestand. They win all four of their home games. They have now won six in a row. They have also won 7 of 8. That now puts them in third in the Western Conference standings. They are a game and a half back of the Thunder, who sit atop the standings, and they're also a game back of the Rockets. Shout out to Dylan Brooks, doing Dylan Brooks things last night. It's nice to have him be somewhere else. And I was Dylan agnostic. Like, I really was. Like, I felt like the Dylan defenders were a little blind to his shortcomings, and I felt like the Dylan haters didn't recognize enough that what he provided on the defensive end. You got to have somebody like him. With that being said, it's just kind of nice to have him be somewhere else right now. But to me, the thing is, okay, how much of this is real? Because right now, the Grizzlies, they've won six straight. Well, they were favored to win 5 of the 6 games, and they were double-digit favorites in multiple of those games. And a lot of that was scheduling. But one thing that is undeniable right now is you got 3 of 4 games last week with Ja, Dez, and Jaren all on the floor. And I continue to say it. I know I was there in person yesterday, and so sometimes when you're there and in person, you find yourself even more in awe. But I don't care statistically if this becomes his best year. Right now, the basketball that Ja Morant is playing is the best basketball of his career. He is so in control on the offensive end, and then now you're even starting to get in, you're getting more effort on the defensive end. His defense has picked up significantly, and it's not even just kind of what I used to deem cheater defense, where you know, you kind of let the guy go by and then you try to rip it from behind him. Like, it's staying in front of your man. It's really looking like he's taking pride on the defensive end. But to me, it's kind of one of these situations where it's like, okay, the schedule has been as such that they're winning a bunch of games big, which is what they should be doing. I'm ready to see some tests to feel like, okay, where do these guys stack up in the top of the pecking order? Because I think we feel safe saying, okay, Oklahoma City's still going to be there. I don't know what the Rockets are going to be this season, but I mean, they've loaded up this year to try to be good, so it's not as if like it's a coincidence that they're at the top, but I'm still not quite sure. I feel better about saying that they are going to avoid the play-in, which is kind of what I felt like coming into the year. I still don't know in terms of contending for the West where I put them, but if we start to get more of Ja, Jaren, and Dez on the floor for more and more games, well, then I feel a whole heck of a lot better, because to me, it's all just boils down to tell me if Ja's on the floor, because if Ja's on the floor, they got a chance.
No, for sure. And he's playing really, really good basketball right now. And I'm with you. If all three of those guys on the floor, Triple J, Ja Morant, and they're going to be a top five team in the West.
Yeah.
They're going to be a top five, especially the way that Ja Morant is playing basketball now. And like you said, shout out to Coach Udoka or whatever. That Houston is, you know, I know they loaded up, Coach, but if you ask most people in the West on paper, many people still didn't have them as a play. You know what I mean?
They thought they'd kind of be in that, maybe they can fight from the play-in, maybe type, play, you know, yeah. maybe they play, maybe if they good health, they can be a top 16, but no one thought they're going to be second in the West.
West, and it's still early. So I think the Grizzlies are playing really, really good. With them winning, do they go straight to Vegas now or no?
So now, they did it also since we last talked. The Grizzlies have won a cup game. They win a cup game on Friday against the Pelicans, first ever. They have Dallas tomorrow night in Dallas. It's the last cup game. I think the odds are stacked against them. They're obviously going to have to win the game, but I think it's going to kind of come down to point differential too.
Okay, because I know I'm supposed to be up there because they got a big Nike high school, but I know the Final Four play in Vegas. That 13 through 15, which in time is flying so much as already.
I mean, you blink and we're already in December.
Yeah, this year is over with.
All right, so right now, the Grizzlies at 1-2, they have a -6 point differential. It seems unlike, so the Warriors are 3-0. The worst they can be is 3-1, and then the worst, it's going to basically come down to Mavs and point differential.
Okay.
So I guess if you get into a scenario where you beat the Mavs, that would put them at 2-2. The Mavs would be 2-2. You have a puncher's chance at that point because it becomes head-to-head. That would also, you probably need, so you need Golden State to get to advance to the next round. You need Golden State to beat the Nuggets, and that would knock the Nuggets to 1-3. And then if you could beat the Mavericks on the road, you would both be 2-2, and you would win the head-to-head. So that's their path. But if the Nuggets beat the Mavericks, then if the Nuggets beat the Warriors, then the Warriors are at 3-1, and then it's going to come down to three teams at 2-2, and point differential would matter, and the Grizzlies are unlikely to advance because right now the Mavericks are sitting at a +41 point differential. So if you had three teams tied.
Okay, so it's a lot to go on because I know the Cup, certain games are further play.
Correct.
And certain ain't, so that would be throwing me off sometimes. I guess when they play on certain courts, they usually make the court a difference.
So here's what I figured out. Cup games are only on Tuesdays and Fridays.
Okay.
And then if you see the weird floor, that's a Cup game.
That's a Cup game, yeah.
And it's not like a throwback floor. It's got to be the colored floor, like the eyesore floor. Okay. Then you're there.
Then you're there. You're there.
Correct.
But no, Grizzlies are at a high level right now, man. And like I say, what a time to be a Grizzly fan. Ja Morant, I still haven't been to a game this year, but all my family and friends, even yesterday, someone tried to get me, had some really good seats, and I was just, that day before school or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
The holidays. I kind of got tired up getting my daughter prepared for the week. But no, like you say, throw statistics out of it, because even on my level when I recruit, and I know we have analytics and we have stats and we have synergy and stuff, I'm a big type of guy that likes to go watch the game. I get more out of it. If I can pull up in person and watch a game, I can see how unique it is. And right now, everybody who has eyes see Ja Morant is playing winning ball, even when it don't go on the stat sheet and things like that. He's playing high, high, high level basketball.
Yeah, to me, it's like, give me one of two setups. Either get me there in person or give me the coach's copy. Because when you watch the TV copy, like for the most part, and you get why they do it. Like they're presenting as a television product, but it's basically following the ball.
Mm-hmm.
What is so impressive when you're there and in person about him is how much he's just manipulating defenses, and how if he just like takes a stutter step, like how much everybody has to overreact to whatever he's doing, and how he's able to just set up defenders right now. And it's just, man, it's high level. And if you enjoy point guard play, it's as good as it can be, because it's not even like he's putting up these overwhelming numbers by just shooting the skin off of it. Like the shooting's just kind of been what it is. It's just, he right now is in complete and utter control.
No, agreed. And, everyone should love point guard play.
Amen.
If you got one of those.
If you like quarterback play, you should like point guard play.
Yeah, if you got one of those, you have a really, really good chance at any level to compete. Secondly, like you said, Coach, he's almost getting treated like a diva wide receiver. Well, not a diva. Well, they all divas, but a high, yeah, high level wide receiver where a good offensive coordinator, it's so much attention on that receiver.
Yes.
That anytime he do anything, so many people go with him. You can do, that's kind of like you said, the defense is so overreaction with him that it's just creating so much other stuff and making it fun basketball, making it winning basketball, and allow the Grizzlies to can be successful on all levels.
Yeah, I'm with you entirely. It's like when, you know, if Ja'Marr Chase is on the field, you got to know where he is. If Justin Jefferson's on the field, you got to know where he is. And so it's oftentimes when you go, how did that guy get open? Well, it's because they had three guys looking at the other one. And the easiest way to look at it is like the number of wide open layups, dunks that the Grizzlies get when Ja's on the floor versus when he's not. Like, it's usually because everybody's focused on where he is with the basketball. So the Grizzlies tomorrow night taking on the Mavericks. So for the Grizzlies to advance in cup play, they would need to beat the Mavericks, and then really the simplest formula is beat the Mavericks and then have the Warriors beat the Nuggets, and then that way they would advance based on head-to-head, and that would also eliminate the Nuggets because the Nuggets do have the head-to-head against the Grizzlies. All right, college football. All right, we had another Saturday, and really, I guess with rivalry week, so you get some things on Friday. We got the Tigers with the lone standalone game on Thursday, knocking off Tulane, and really pretty much ending Tulane's outside hopes of making the college football playoff. I suppose if Boise loses to UNLV, maybe there's a backdoor path, but it always seems to me it's like if Boise loses to UNLV, UNLV is just going to take the spot. But for the most part, they eliminate Tulane. Then we get to Friday, and Georgia's looking like they're going to lose to Georgia Tech. They go to overtime. I will never understand this, Herd. All right, let me set this up for you. You're a 20-point underdog. You have outplayed the Georgia Bulldogs for four quarters, but you had one mistake, and the game's going to overtime. You win the toss in overtime, so that means Georgia's going to go first, and you're going to get the ball second. And also keep in mind, in the second overtime, you have to go for two. Everybody does. It's not like it used to be. It used to be in overtime, the first two periods were one team could go for one, and then you could go for two if you wanted to try and end the game. But everybody, for the first two periods, then the third period became everybody had to go for two. Then we switched it to the first period is straight up football from the 25. The second period is everybody's got to go for two. After the second period, then it becomes alternating two-point plays till you declare a winner. If you get the ball second and you're a 20-point underdog and you know the next period I have to go for two anyway, why would you not go for two? It makes zero sense to me. And that was what Georgia Tech did. Brent Key ended up giving it away because when they scored first in the second overtime, he put the finger up to go for one, and you realize, like, oh, he didn't know the rules. You can't go for one. You have to go for two. I just don't understand. There's not a Georgia Tech fan in the world that would have been upset if they go for it and don't get it. Like, you had one play to end the game. I will just never understand. I don't understand in this format why if you score second, you don't go for two. Like, you're going to have to do it the next period anyway.
I agree with that. And the rules have changed because you just enlightened me because I thought it was still where, because, you know, you don't be eight overtime
right.
often.
But well, I this thought one it, technically went to eight, but it was because of two-point plays. You only get one, starting in the third overtime, it's from the three-yard line, each team gets one play.
Oh, see, I
so technically it went eight overtimes, but that's because it was eight overtimes at one play.
Okay, because I'm still in the mishap of, you know, you do the everything, everybody keeps going to the 25, and then after the first one, you go
for two. When we first started this overtime format, everyone was like, oh, my God, look at these games going seven overtimes. This is great. Well, then we had the Twitter era, and on is either Thanksgiving night or it was Thanksgiving weekend, LSU played Texas A&M in a game that went seven overtimes, and which, by the way, wasn't even the longest overtime game. It went seven overtimes, and heroes on Twitter were like, this is wrong. They're playing too many plays. Like, we have to do something about it. And the NCAA, being the way that they are, wildly overreacted, and they came up with a new format that's really not that satisfying. And it's made it confusing. Now, I would also say this to Brent Key. You're paid millions of dollars to know the overtime
rules. Yeah. So now you just keep getting it from the two-yard line.
Starting in the third overtime, the two-yard line, you get a shot, I get a shot, then we flip. So if you get it and I don't get it, game's over. But if you get it, I get it, or you don't get it and I don't get it, we now go to the other end of the field, I get the ball first, and then we play it out again until there's a winner.
Oh, that makes sense, because I was just going to say, actually, if we go to the 2 yard line and it's on the one play, can we just keep flipping on the same side, but we actually got to still keep marching down?
Technically, you don't have to, but everyone chooses, like, because Georgia wanted to play to their student section. And so when Georgia Tech gets the ball, like, well, we want to go play the other
end. Oh, I got
so it's like
it.
That. Like, you technically don't have to flip into the field, but that also conveniently allows the TV networks to get in a few more commercials.
Oh, makes sense on the business side, too. Georgia Tech played their butt off.
And that's where it's like, I don't want to kill Key because he had a perfect game plan.
You see how long he stayed out there? Did you see that?
With him and Kirby? Because they were on the same Bama staff together.
No, Kirby was gone. Like him
and Kirby, like at the post-game hug, they were there for like an uncomfortably long amount of time, like 90 seconds.
So after that, they got a reel all on social media where he just stood and looked at the scoreboard like for a while before he went. Him and the police stopped because they was wondering what he was doing. And he like was like, I guess he just feel like he let, you know how it is, and you done played your heart out and still come up short.
Kind of like maybe I should have gone for two earlier.
Yeah.
So because of the setup, we now know Georgia and Texas ends up beating Texas A&M on Saturday night. We now know the SEC championship game will be Texas and Georgia. Both teams feel safe. Well, the other chaos that we got from the week, your boys go down in Syracuse. I saw some people that were questioning Mario kicking the field goal. I didn't really have a problem with it when he kicked it because they'd been getting stopped on fourth down. All right, you're going to need a stop at some point anyway. Kick the field goal, try to get the stop, and then you have to say, all right, boys, you try to stop Cam Ward from beating you. I was kind of fine with it. I understand if people were like, well, try to tie the game up, whatever. But now we get into the question of Miami with two losses, how far do they drop? Does that drop them out? As of right now, Heather Dinich, who's one of the lead reporters, she is projecting that doesn't drop them out. It drops them to 11, and that would put Alabama at 12, and therefore, because the Big 12 winner's probably coming from behind of them, basically Miami would get the last spot in over Alabama. I don't know how it's going to play out. Here's what really matters. Ohio State is going to be in despite not making the title game. Tennessee is going to be in. Shout out to the Vols because that game could have gotten so squirrely. You have the nightmare start from hell, the quick turnovers. All of a sudden, Vandy's jumped up on you 17-7, but they settled in and they did what you should do in that spot, which is we've got to figure out a way to win this game and get out of here with a win. They dominated from that point forward and they rightfully earned their spot in. But now the remaining questions are, because of Miami's loss, that now puts Clemson into the title game, despite Clemson losing at home to South Carolina on Saturday. That was a non-conference game, so it doesn't matter. Clemson and SMU are going to play in the ACC title game. It's very clean if SMU wins. If SMU wins, SMU's getting in and Clemson's out. Then you get into the question of what happens if Clemson wins. Does SMU stay in? Does SMU get bounced out? Does SMU get bounced out, but Miami stays in? It's really going to be a question of how many ACC teams are going to get in. Is it going to be two or is it going to be one? Because if it's two, then Alabama's likely out. If it's one, Alabama's likely in. Then we also have, we know we're going to have a Big 12 champion. So whoever wins from Iowa State or Arizona State, that winner's in, but the loser's probably out. That's kind of where we are. But this is kind of the question that I have, because you were, honestly, you've been on this train even kind of before I was comfortable getting it with it, because I think there is a legitimate question of, is the SEC going to quote-unquote get punished because more of the league is competitive than the other leagues that we see? And to a certain degree, I kind of do subscribe to, hey, Ole Miss, beat Kentucky. You're 17-point favorites. You got them at home. Beat Kentucky. Or, by the way, if you don't beat Kentucky, turn around. You got a chance to beat Florida. Beat Florida. And you're not sitting here. But when you do watch a lot of the rest of college football, you do realize what has helped a lot of these other leagues is that the middle and bottom part of the conferences are not really capable of beating the top end. So as I pointed out in the big, in the, until Michigan beat Ohio State on Saturday, no team outside of the top four of the Big Ten had beaten a top four team. That was the first and only. And so kind of what we've seen in the ACC, it's the same thing. Like the bottom half of the league's not capable of beating the top half. Like, I do kind of struggle with it. And the reason why I struggle with it is not necessarily from a playoff format. What I struggle with is I think it's going to incentivize leagues to not play as many good games. They're going to try to start thinning the schedules. And so if everyone's going to sit there and go, well, the lesson is have as few losses as possible, I worry about that. Because one thing I really enjoyed about this year was I felt like week in, week out, we had a higher volume of really good games and games I wanted to watch. My fear is if the SEC gets punished for that, we will start to see a manipulating of the schedule.
No, like you say, I was on that because I just feel like the SEC at any time, you can win or lose. I remember early on, people thought South Carolina wasn't going to be good. They came top 15. You go on and on with it. And Tuesday, tomorrow is going to be very interesting because as I was watching these games, like, okay, like even if Georgia would have lost that game, they were still in. But then if Texas
it
would
have been they were going to be in the SEC title game, so they were going to have a game to play themselves in. I don't know if they would have been protected. Like, if they lose that game
and lose the SEC
championship game, are they in? I don't know. But there's some thought that they're going to protect the teams that are in the title game. Yeah. But if they would have lost and then lost again, they're probably out. But now they're in a position where because they win, they're in no matter what now.
Yeah. So what I was saying, asking was they was in the SEC championship regardless.
Correct.
And the winner of Texas and Texas Tech, either or
Texas A&M.
My bad.
Correct. The winner, whoever, it was very clean at that point. It was either whoever won between Texas and Texas A&M was going to go play Georgia.
So now the SEC have Georgia and Tennessee in, and it's just a matter of Alabama. It should be
Georgia,
one more.
Texas, and Tennessee are in.
Georgia, all three of them in.
Correct.
Yeah. And so it's a matter about the fourth one.
Correct.
Alabama, because Texas A&M out now, right?
Correct.
And Ole Miss is for sure out now, right?
Likely. It feels like there's going to be a math problem.
And then with the Big Ten, we're going to probably have Ohio State, Oregon, and Penn State. And
Indiana. So Ohio State's loss knocked them out of the title game, which means Penn State and Oregon are now in the title game. They're in. And what people are thinking is, okay, Ohio State's been bumped out of, for sure, hosting, but they're going to be in, and Indiana's going to be in.
So if Penn State lose, they might get out too, right?
Yeah, they're probably okay because in the end, they're gonna, because they're 11-1 and in the title game, there's the belief that they will protect. They won't penalize. They won't penalize Penn State for being in the title game. Now, what might happen is if they lose, Notre Dame might jump them.
Well, in that case, we got to knock Indiana out. I'm gonna tell you why. There's no way you could put four Big Ten teams in and three SEC.
I think it's what's going to happen.
Yeah. Let me ask you this or whatever, too. You know how much SMU had to do and pay and not get money for 7 years and pay to get into the ACC? I think it should be
over $500 million. Yeah.
I think it should be a rule if you if they win the ACC championship, it should be a rule. They should actually get some money because not only it's like now you didn't do them a favor. You did them a favor, but they only fought for what was right.
They paid to beat you.
Yeah, they came and dominated your league year one. So it's like, we were supposed to be here anyway. We just had to get an approval. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it's an honor for us to be here at this point.
Yeah. It also, though, I think that also reflects poorly on the ACC. That a team that literally can just come in. Like, what we've normally seen is when teams switch leagues and they go up. Like, Houston, UCF, and Cincinnati have not fared well in the Big 12, and this is a diminished Big 12. I feel like what it says about the ACC, and I know the schedule kind of broke for SMU, but what it's largely said about the ACC is like, man, it's just not that good of a league. And so that's kind of where I struggle. It's like, are we really putting in two ACC teams?
With it not being good, I still got to get SMU props. It's not.
Oh, I agree with you on that.
It's not as bad for them to be undefeated, though. They have played a really good brand of basketball. I mean, football, and for them to be, I feel like, oh, they deserve a shirt or something. This is incredible. And let's say they make it to the playoffs, then it's become bigger than ACC and win a couple games. I think that's awesome.
No, I'm with you. They literally put their money where their mouth is. Like, hey, we think we should be at this level. We're gonna pay to compete at this level, but. by God, they're proving it. I just really struggle with going, should that league have multiple teams? And I guess that's kind of the real question is it clear to you that another two-loss team should be ahead of SEC three-loss teams?
It just depends on the scenario. And I'm not just saying this because I'm a fan, though. Like, I do think Miami should get in. Because of, like, the year they had, and you're going to have probably the Heisman, you know, candidate. It's just a lot to go. If it wasn't, I'd say, no, let's do one. But I just think everybody knows, no matter who wins the championship, Miami's the best team in the ACC, even though they're not playing in the game. They are the best team in the ACC.
I think you're right. And then that's the other thing. It's like we're acting like Syracuse was like a 4-win team. They went 9-3.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then they also, like, their two losses are one possession losses to Georgia Tech and to Syracuse. Both were road games. I don't know, like, because I am kind of in the, I think the SEC can overdo it. I think, I've always said this, whatever we've determined is the best team in the SEC, that's a team I'll ride with, because usually that team has got a better roster than pretty much anyone else. But there have been years where I've watched a lot of the mid-card of the SEC where I'm like, these teams aren't that good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I do think is different about the SEC compared to a lot of these other places is there are more teams that have well-funded rosters than these other leagues. And so I think it's easier to get tripped up in the SEC than it is to, in particular with the other leagues. But I'm with you on that. All right. Then the other big thing from the weekend, I have decided I am officially checked out on flag planting outrage. I have always believed this. Like, it is a sport that is a largely emotional sport. And if you don't want them to plant the flag on your field, you had 60 minutes of football to prove that they didn't do it. And the just the pearl clutching and whatnot, it's just, I'm so out on it. Like, don't lose.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Ohio State, if you make two field goals, you don't throw red zone picks, Michigan's not going to plant the flag even if you win by one. Don't lose. You're 20-point favorites. And, like, that's kind of the other thing. It's like, if you're Ohio State, what do you do? Because this would be my argument. I don't want to hear what Ryan Day's record is. He has the Ohio State job. Do you realize how hard it is to lose games with that roster? Like, they have the number one funded roster. You're literally paying him to win this game, and he can't win it. And so you're paying a top five salary for what? What are that always comes to me the question of, what are you paying for? You don't win the Big Ten. You're not winning national championships. And that's even the worst part now. It's like, even if you go on to win the national title, which I don't think you will, if you go on to win the national title, like, you're just going to have to live with losing to Michigan. And Michigan can claim another national title. Like, I don't understand. Like, what are you paying for? It's because it would be different to me if I felt like Ryan Day had this massive body of work that said that guy should have an elite job. He was gifted the greatest job in the country. If you put the Ohio State job on the market, are you really telling me you can't get someone better than Ryan Day? And, like, that's kind of the other thing. I've always thought about it like this. If I'm hiring someone for that kind of job, I think the first question I'm asking is, who would put the fear of God in Michigan if I hired? Like, I don't think you want your coach to be someone that your biggest rival's going, thank God he's there. Like, it's just not a good spot to be. Like, you want them, like, in the end, Ohio State was scared of Jim Harbaugh. Like, that's kind of what, Michigan was scared of Urban Meyer. Like, I totally get this. Like, why would you continue to pay $12 million to someone that you're the only game that actually matters on your schedule? Everyone on the other side is like, thank God he's there.
I agree. Where I give a little pushback is I got to go with the overall record. I got to go with all that.
But he has the Ohio State job.
Yes, he do, but that's how Urban Meyer and certain people got the job, and even certain people that had Alabama job, horrible coaches have messed it up at times. That's how Nick Saban was able to come back. That's how, you know, Urban Meyer was able. So it has been. That's just like people look at Michigan job as that type of level, but it went through some.
I think the Ohio State job's better than the Michigan job.
Now it is because, I think it was head up, but Michigan went through a 15-year stretch where they hired some bad coaches before.
The only thing I'll listen to now is it appears Michigan has motivated their money people to like, hey, guys, this is what it takes. Like, there was a lot of people at Michigan that are kind of like, we can do it the right way. We can do it the Michigan way. And then everybody realized, like, no, guys, like, we're going to have to pay like $20 million for a roster.
Yeah,
and so we can pretend that like a Michigan man could do this, but like, no, you know, the biggest reason why our Michigan man just won a national title, like in the last 3 years, we have 51 pros.
Yeah.
Like that's why we had a Michigan man. So like it's a little bit more unclear to me now because they've now motivated people like, all right, this is what it takes. Still though, more people have had the Ohio State job that have been mediocre and one bigger than mediocre coaches at Michigan.
Yeah, he did. Didn't they just get the top quarterback to flip?
Yes.
I heard.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's true.
Detroit, yes.
10 million, all that crazy stuff. But I will say this. Michigan is doing the same stuff Ohio State just did, just how Ryan got the job. You know, they gave a guy a job, you know, Michigan also. So some people believe in hiring within if people do good. But I'm getting it. A lot of Ohio State fans do want to get rid of them because they feel like you got to beat Michigan, you got to win the Big Ten, and you got to at least make it to a national championship game, if not win it, Ohio State. It's just hard for me to fire a person just for losing one game a year or something, though. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes, too.
But they're favored in every game.
Favored in every game. Well, I mean, but he could also lose them games. I mean.
I just think if you put the Ohio State job on the market, you're going to be able to have a better coach than.
No, for sure. You know what? I don't feel sorry for too many millionaires if it's.
No, he's going to. By the way, I believe if he is no longer the coach, it's $54
million. Yeah, if it's not a death or mental thing, but I'm going to be real with you. I kind of feel sorry for him going through the tunnel also because I'm like, his whole world feel like it's crushed whether he beat Michigan or not.
Yeah, you know? But it also comes back to like literally you hired your brother to run a public or a private investigation on sign stealing because you couldn't beat Michigan.
Yeah.
And now it's like, you knew this year, it's like, I'm a 20. He can't have excuses anymore. Like last year, you can do they cheated to beat us. And it's like this year, I'm a 20-point favorite at home. Yeah, the sign stealing.
Yeah.
I
ain't gonna lie,
that one.
They just made Michigan, don't be real with you. Michigan come off a national championship. They got a new coach. And I think this year was mediocre. I think by beating Ohio State, it's considered a successful year.
Michigan fans will say, we beat Michigan State, we beat Ohio State, we got our quarterback.
We good.
We won a title. 2024 was a success. All right, let's talk a little NFL. We'll take a quick break. We'll do that next right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Herd, we had another extended holiday weekend of football. As projected, I told y'all the Giants-Cowboys game was a game that should not be televised. Cowboys knock off the Giants, but we had the Lions beat the Bears, and of course the late game management causes Matt Eberflus to lose his job. The Packers looked really good against the Dolphins in the nightcap. The Dolphins looked really cold. We then turned around and had the Chiefs winning yet again another one-score game. But I think this was one of the more interesting things about yesterday. So, I believe Mike Florio just put this up, that the Bills this season, when scoring 33 points or more, are 2-4. The rest of the NFL is 52-1. Also, on the flip side of that, I asked this question. Because the Steelers won a game that we're not used to seeing the Steelers win, which is a shootout. And they win 44-38. Should we take them more seriously as a Super Bowl contender? Should they be in the same category as Chiefs, Bills, Lions, and now Eagles? I feel like those are the four teams that have kind of separated because now the Ravens lose again, and they lost to the Eagles. But now the Ravens are likely going to be coming out of the wild card. Should we be putting the Steelers on that category?
I would still put a tad notch below because I think a lot of the Steelers, the other teams are more talented you just named. I think the Steelers' wins are coming from culture and head coach more. Now, they do have a talented roster, but yes. I just feel like 9-3, I don't think they're –
No, I think this is Tomlin's – Tomlin is an all-time great, in my opinion, and I guess maybe because I've rooted for a bad franchise. When I see the Steelers complaining about Tomlin, it's like I would take him in a heartbeat. Like, this is – I think even Steelers fans would tip their cap this year going, like, they're dropping mediocre Mike for a while because – I mean, for God's sakes, he got the corpse of Russell Wilson, and he's winning shootouts against Joe Burrow.
That's pretty impressive. So I would still put them a notch under. Now, this is why I will – the only thing that will give me them more Super Bowl hope to me, if they finish so strong where they get, like, a good amount of games of home field advantage in the playoffs, then I would kind of say they have a good shot at that point.
I think the hesitation for me is it's like I know that they're good, and I know that they've beaten Lamar. I know they've beaten Burrow. It's like – when you get into this one-game scenario and you're going to have to beat some combination of Josh Allen, Burrow, or Josh Allen, Lamar, and Mahomes, it's like you have to beat at least two of them, if not three of them. That's where it starts to get like, I don't know, man. Like, and if he does do that, like that is like, that's like the shining star because then he gets his second Super Bowl and like to be someone that would spoil the Mahomes era. Like, that to me, like, that's when you kind of tip your cap. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll tell your story next. Right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Herd, for today's Don't Tell The Story, Tell Your Story. Josh Allen got engaged to Hailee Steinfeld, the actress, over the bye week, but that also meant that his ex was active on social media. On Instagram, his ex, let's see, what's her name? It's Williams. Brittany Williams. One of the comments on one of her Instagram posts said, "Found the next pro athlete yet?" To which she clapped back, "Luckily, my boyfriend owns a team and doesn't play for one." She gave the prayer hands. "Don't have to be with another brain-dead CTE athlete anymore." Well, the comment has since been deleted, and her, I hope you're sitting down for this, she was hacked.
There's been a lot of hacking going on.
All right, my man. Always appreciate you being in here.
Yes, sir. Always.
That is Coach Herd. If you missed anything, be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For Dennis, for Munns, for Herd, this is Jeffrey Zan. Thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show with Connor and George coming up next.